And he joins me now to talk about the brand new special on Netflix, The Good Old Days. Mr. Jeff Foxworthy's here with us this morning. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk to you. Of course, the special dropped on Netflix yesterday at the time that we're talking. What's the reception been like for you thus far?
It was kind of funny because I was actually babysitting my one-year-old grandson last night. And I kind of forgot about it, and my phone started blowing up, and people were like, dude, this is hilarious. I'm like, I'm not even working tonight, you know? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, oh, crap, it's tonight. So the response has been just great. I'm really proud of it. You know, I've been blessed to do a ton of stuff, but out of all of it, stand-up has always been my favorite thing. And then, you know, I think since 84, the longest I ever went without doing stand-up was a couple of weeks when my kids were born. Then COVID hit, and I went a couple of years. And out of everything, that was the thing I missed. And so, you know, I took the time to just write a ton of stuff. But you never know if it's good till you get back in a club and start playing with it. You know, so, and there's no other way around that. So when they started lifting restrictions, I'd be in little clubs on Monday and Tuesday nights. You know, just, hey, is this funny? Is this funny? To see it go from that to being a special that you're proud of, it's really cool.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, of course, comedy, everything's about the timing of it, right? I mean, not only the timing of the material, but the timing on stage is the most important thing. And I feel like with COVID, you know, obviously the clubs weren't available. So when you got back in them, did you feel like your timing was affected at all? Did it take you a little while to get back into the groove? Because I figure when you're putting a special together, especially your first one in years as a solo special, you really got to run that material over and over again to get it down to a science. Did you feel like your timing was off at all due to COVID?
I did. You know, it's funny. I'm one of those guys, I never get nervous. You and I could be talking and somebody could hand me a mic and say, hey, there's 50,000 people out there. You need to go. And I didn't want to think about it. I'd go do it. But with a 2-year layover, I was nervous, you know, and then I got up there and, you know, said something, and everybody laughed, and they're like, oh, well, I know how to do this. It's like riding a bike. And, you know, you write, but there's so much that gets added to it and comes out kind of organically when you get on stage and start playing with it. But you have to have that confidence to do that. So, you know, it took a couple of times. I'm like, oh, no, I know how to do this. I'm good at this. I can do this. And then it was just fun again. And it's, you know, I think it was very interesting during COVID that one of the most, probably the most anxious and stressful times of any of our lives, I never thought that laughter makes people's problems go away, but laughter is, it's like a release valve that keeps the boiler from exploding. And you thought, you know, that and live music and all through COVID, that's the two things we didn't have. We didn't have comedy. And we didn't have the live music, which were great stress relievers. And so now what's happening is people are coming up after the show and they're like, oh, my God, I can't remember why I laughed like that. It feels so good to laugh. And I'm like, yeah, we need to, you know. All we do now is just yell at each other. We need to all kind of laugh and not take ourselves quite so seriously.
Well, you know, I think that you hit it on the head there with all we do, it seems like, with social media and, you know, the way that the world is working right now. All we do is find we point out each other's differences more than we point out what we have in common. And I think that that's almost been polarizing in comedy. I feel like nowadays you almost have to pick a side in comedy to find your niche. If you look at the late night shows or you look at really anything, things become political or things like that. What do you, in this new special, do you touch on any of the climate of the world today? Especially, it seems like sometimes to be a comedian is the toughest job because people are going to come for you no matter what you say. If you look at what's happened to Dave Chappelle or other comedians, do you touch on the climate of the world at all in the new special?
Not really, but that's a great observation. You know, I've got comic friends that are like, I don't want to do it anymore. People are just, they're gunning for you. But I think what you said is exactly right. It's the job of the comic, A, we're supposed to be truth tellers, but B, we're supposed to find what do we all have in common. And I think if you took people on opposite sides of the political equation, somebody that was pegging left and somebody that was pegging right, and you sat them down and you said, what's important to you in life? What do you want out of life? I bet you we would agree on 85% of the same things. And what we do as a society is we don't celebrate that 85% that we have in common. We yell at each other over the 15% that's different. And, A, we should be. If we were all alike, how boring would that be? But my job is to find what do we have in common. And so even, you know, doing a dive on something like this, it's like, you know, my father-in-law is always talking about how much better things were in the good old days. And so during COVID, I'm like, was it? So I went and looked at my childhood versus now, and some things were better then and some things are better now. But it made for really fun material because it was multi-generational. As you'd say something and the older people in the crowd would laugh, and then you'd hit it back and the younger people would laugh. And realize it doesn't matter where you live or what color we are. This is all stuff all of us have in common.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's really, you know, that's what we need to do is definitely find the things that we can laugh at in common, especially generational. That's so important. And also though, regional, right? Is I think a lot of the times we're here in Texas, I'm here in Texas, and people in California or New York or in the Midwest or even in Florida, they might have a preconceived notion of Texas or Georgia or things like that. And it's funny though how comedy can break down those borders even within the United States. I had an actor on, Jason Williams, who's known in for playing in the Greater Tuna plays. I don't know if you ever heard of those, but big plays here in Texas, the tuna. And he was saying he got more laughs in San Francisco than he did in Austin, right? And people were responding to a comedy that you might think would be regional. And that's what I was going to ask you is, obviously everybody knows that you might be a redneck and things of that nature. Do you find that your comedy translates out of the South almost better than even in the South?
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those lucky people. I've been to all 50 states, almost every part of all 50 states. And I don't, you know, if I'm doing a show in Washington, I don't think, oh, I need to do different material up here. Because we have, you're right, we have these notions in our mind that they're different here or they're different there. But if you go sit down with them, you know what? Everybody just wants to be able to pay their bills. Everybody wants to be able to take care of their kids. And you realize, crap, we're not really different. The scenery changes and the accents change, but pretty much we all want the same thing out of life. And that's our job. I think if we, if comics, if we ever quit telling the truth of taking society and holding it up and go, why do we do this? Why do we do that? Then I think our job's obsolete. You know, and what we need to learn is we have to give up the ability to be right. Because I think about how many things that I might have argued vehemently for when I was 25, that now my opinion has totally changed. And so you're not right. Nobody's got it figured out. Nobody has life figured out. We're all just guessing every day, you know, trying to make the right choice. And that's what makes us human, that ability to change your mind. And so as a comic, that's always what I'm looking at.
The interesting thing, like you said, you as you get older, certain things stick out to you that or you think a certain way about something that you didn't when you were younger. And one of the things that you hit on the special was the idea of you said when you were a kid, you used to play all the sports. And back then you had to to get a trophy, you had to get in first place. Right. Those are some of the older values. You know, my folks are, you know, born in the 40s and 50s. And so I have some of those kind of old school values instilled in me, even though I'm almost, you know, I'm 29 right now. Well, I had those old school values instilled in me. Tell me, you know, for your family, what are some of those lessons that you hope that your family, you know, latches onto that maybe this generation doesn't have? Is it, hey, you got to earn first place instead of just being given stuff? Like, what are some of those old values that you were taught that you hope the next generation holds on to?
Well, I think so. You know, is that an idea? You shouldn't get a trophy for participating. A trophy means excellence. So, you know, that should be for winning. You know, I had the whole time my kids were growing up, I had a chalkboard on the garage door. So when you left the house and got in the car, and it said, be kind and try hard. And that was every day to my kids. Be kind to people and try hard, you know. And so that's kind of what I try to instill, because, you know, and I remind myself every night before I walk out on stage, I'm like, all right, everybody I'm going to be looking at is going through some kind of a struggle. It might be a financial struggle. It might be a physical struggle. It might be an emotional struggle. But everybody's going through a struggle. And you don't know what people are going through. So just be kind to them. Have grace with them. And like I said, I don't think laughter makes that struggle go away. But it does help you to deal with it. And, you know, we've kind of lost that. A, we've lost the ability to laugh at ourselves. And we need to not take ourselves quite so seriously, and I don't have to agree with everything you say to still be your friend. It's okay that we don't agree on everything.
Absolutely. I have, you know, I could talk to you here all day about a myriad of different things, but I have one more thing for you. Of course, the special is called The Good Old Days. It's on Netflix right now. Jeff Foxworthy joining us. I always am curious of your writing process, a comedian's writing process. Everybody's different. But for you, you know, you've been doing this for decades now at a very, very high level. Very few people have gotten to walk the path that Jeff Foxworthy has gotten to walk. How do you continue to, how do you write? Do you see something and you say, oh, that'd be funny, and you jot it down in your phone? Do you start kicking around a bit in your head? Like, kind of what's your process?
A lot of that. I mean, I'll see something or I'll think something, and I'll put it in notes in my phone, and then I'll go home, and it's funny, I still write everything out the first time long-handed. You know, I'll write it in a notebook and then sit there and kind of ponder over it. I have a friend that calls it being intimate with it. You know, you're thinking about it. And for me, when you're doing a setup, that's the part people aren't laughing. So once you do that work, the longer I've done it, I'm like, all right, since I've gotten here, can I dig deeper? Is there, instead of there's one laugh here, can I find two or three or four? And I was telling a young comic the other day, I said, you know, when I was 28, my bits were 2 and 3 minutes long. Now they're 30 minutes long or 20 minutes long, because I've learned through the years, once I get there, is there more I can say about this? And I think, you know, that just comes with experience. It's, but yeah, my whole life is note cards and notes on my phone, and I'll sit there and go back through them and go, oh yeah, I was thinking that the other day. Is there something funny in this? And, you know, if you and I are sitting there talking, I may throw it out there and see if you laugh. And if you laugh, I'm like, okay, there's something here. And, you know, then that kind of encourages me to go work on it some more. But, you know, you never get to the point, and this is part of what fascinates me about stand-up, you never get to the point where you know something's going to work. Because I'll go into a club with an idea, and I think, oh, they're going to love this. And you throw it out there, and it's crickets. And you're like, really? You know, or I have a thought that I thought, this is stupid, but I'm going to throw it out there. And you say it, and people are snotting on themselves. And you're like, really? So, you know, I just kind of assume the audience is always right. They'll tell you what's funny and what's not. And you just, you know, you always be grinding and working and trying to find something new to talk about.
Oh, man, I love hearing that. I love hearing that. But that is Jeff Foxworthy. The special is called The Good Old Days. It's on Netflix right now. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Hope you have a great day.
All right, you too. That's Jeff Foxworthy, everybody.